Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellard Sargent. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. Confidence in government's ability to solve basic problems is at a near all-time low, and voting across the Central Coast resulted in a near record low turnout in the 2014 elections. Citizens are calling for greater accountability and transparency. The solution, some suggest, may be in civic technology. Just as the capacity to manage and analyze big data has transformed a lot of industry, reform-minded tech experts are turning to open data and new technology that not only allows citizens to better monitor their governments, but also empowers them to be a part of it. Dr. Sam Blakesley served in both the California State Assembly and the State Senate, is an experienced scientist and a business owner, the founder of the Institute for Advanced Technology and Public Policy at Cal Poly. Dr. Blakesley has been described as one of Sacramento's most bipartisan legislators when he was in that role. And he's had a vision to bring policy leaders, industry experts, students, and faculty together to create and implement practical solutions to the challenges of open government, education, and energy. Today, we'll be talking about one aspect of that vision, using technology to drive democracy. Also joining us today on the telephone is Brendan Carey, who is the West Coast representative for OpenGov, a technology-based tool that is doing what we're talking about, using technology as a way of opening access and visibility. Our show today is live, and you can join the conversation with your comments and questions by calling us at 781-3875. Again, that's 781-3875, and be a part of today's discussion. And Brendan and Dr. Blakesley, thank you for joining me.
I'm glad to be here, Chris. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
You are there, Brendan. Great. Dr. Blakesley, I'd like to start with you. And you know, your experience in the state assembly and the state sentence certainly prepared you for making some upfront decisions about what was working and what didn't. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Of course. Well, I spent almost a decade in the legislature in Sacramento, and what I experienced firsthand is a high degree of alienation with the public with regard to their government. We're seeing that played out right now during this presidential campaign. I don't think any of us have ever seen such high levels of anger and frustration on both sides of the aisle, and for independents, declined to states also. And there's a reason for that level of frustration, and it's because people don't believe that government is responsive to their needs or their voice. So there's real peril when that alienation begins to grow and spread, and you know, potentially people who run for office become demagogues because they find that is what people respond to, when in fact what we need are statesmen and stateswomen who can grapple with problems from a perspective of trying to solve them rather than whip people up. And this issue of how you deal with alienation is one that's been very important to me all throughout my life in politics. And when I left public service, what I wanted to do was start an institute that could begin grappling with problems like this. How do you connect people with their government and do it in a way that causes government to be more responsive? And as a result, I set up the Institute for Advanced Technology and Public Policy at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo and began working on a number of projects. The one we're talking about today is one known as Digital Democracy, which seeks to use technology to open up what's happening in Sacramento for people around the state, and also to better engage with Sacramento so that you can make a real difference.
You know, I was really fascinated when I was going through the website in preparation for the show today, and I would encourage people to definitely go to that, and we'll give them that website. But some of the information on it that were quotes that came through some of the work that you've done is, and you had stated that Every year in the state's capital, 120 full-time lawmakers, 2,000-plus full-time staff, and 130 committee craft policies affecting the state's residents. They introduce 5,000 bills each legislative session.
That's right.
Just in the session, right?
That's right.
And in addition, there are 1,100 lobbyists at work during that period of time that are going to be focused on their particular interest, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
How can there even begin to be transparency there?
Well, and it's made even more problematic because there are no minutes or transcripts or records that detail what happens with each of these bills as they work through the many committees they have to traverse before they ultimately get to the governor's desk. So you have these armies of lobbyists and insiders that navigate these bills through a very complex system. The public has no way, even after the fact, to pull up minutes and find out what happened or why things happened or what amendments were proffered or discussed or debated. And the ability to see which lobbyists were in the room and how those lobbyists were connected to legislators through financial either contributions or gifts is...
Or self-interest.
Self-interest is virtually impossible. So what we sat down and decided to do was tackle that problem head-on through technology. In fact, some of the earliest efforts to generate some funding so we could work with Cal Poly faculty to build this tool were met, you know, frankly, with derision. People said the problem is too big, the challenge too great.
Yeah.
This simply can't be done. We ended up receiving a grant from a philanthropist in Texas, Houston, Texas, of all places. And we're finishing up the 12th month of that grant and have already built and deployed a tool that does a number of remarkable things to try and address the problem I just described. And as you said, you've seen it, so you know it works. This is not vaporware, nor is it sort of a work in progress that we hope maybe in the second year or third year we'll get it actually up and running. It's working now because we've adopted an approach of developing software, sometimes described as agile development, which entails deploying the tool and building the tool simultaneously. What we oftentimes find is that government goes through an exhaustive process to create specs for a tool that ultimately, when it's built, usually over budget and many years after it's due, really has no customers who want to use it. So we've adopted some of Silicon Valley's sort of best practices in how we built this open government digital democracy tool by deploying it and having users give us the feedback that's necessary to make it the right tool for the right job. And I'll describe what it does.
Yeah, if you can, that would be great.
Certainly. So what this tool does, in the face of having no minutes and no records of what actually is happening during these debates for all these bills, what we did is we found the one source of data that does exist, which is the video recordations of the committee hearings themselves. There actually are videos of these hearings, which are typically used by Capitol insiders to know when a bill is being discussed or to be able to track when to send a legislator or a staff person or a lobbyist in to testify on a bill. But what we found is that we could use advanced technology, including artificial intelligence, to create rich text, to essentially transcribe the millions and millions and millions of words that were uttered in all of these thousands of bill hearings, and augment the simple words with lots and lots of information. Who was the speaker? What was the time? What was the date? What was the bill? What was the hearing on which it occurred? What type of communication was it? Was it a bill presentation? Was it a debate and discussion? And by then taking these millions and millions of words and tagging all those words with all these attributes, we then were able to put this volume of data into a very powerful search engine, a database which could be accessed by a search engine, so that a user sitting here in San Luis Obispo can type in any keywords or any phrases or names of any individuals that may be testifying, and with a Google-like search, immediately find all the instances when those searches actually match what's happening in all these committee hearings. And you can quickly pull up and find out exactly perhaps what your assembly member or senator was saying on an issue like climate change or the drought or a bill that you may be interested in, and this ability to very quickly navigate through enormous volumes of data and find just that moment that aligns with what your passion drives you to explore, allows you to be right on top of what's happening in these committee hearings very rapidly. So this tool allows you to not only find the moment in the video very easily and seamlessly, but to then, with a simple click, pop out that video and take a segment and drop it into your social media and communicate with your networks. So if you, for example, have a legislator who's saying something that particularly inspires you or conversely infuriates you,
yes,
you can, with this tool, search for it, find it, extract it, drop this very rich content, which is video-based, into your social media tool. Put your call to action to your network, whether you're with the PTA or you're with the Sierra Club or you're with the California Chamber of Commerce. This tool is completely neutral with regard to who uses it. And then activate your local networks to be engaged on a political issue.
The accountability, the immediacy of the accountability is just paramount here.
It is. And, you know, one of the challenges we faced was how quickly could this process work so you can create the searchable data volume. And what we're finding is, although we hoped we'd have essentially a one-week turnaround after utterances were spoken and then to have it fully loaded into our database and ready for searching, we're now getting turnarounds in many cases of 24 hours.
And you are.
We've had some instances where we had it up on the same day. So the power of this tool and the power of technology is really, I think, outstripped even our expectations.
That's amazing. In your experience in Congress and the Senate, people turned on what they had made as a commitment or a promise.
Correct.
Or, you know, things changed by add-ins and,
that's right,
and deletions at very last 11th hour.
Yeah, so we're finding there's a number of applications for a tool like this. I already mentioned civic engagement and your local, you know, advocates and community organizers using a tool to stay on top of what's happening and mobilize. But also there's actually another form of accountability, because what I saw when serving in the legislature, that oftentimes very poorly prepared bills would come to committee, and after lengthy debate, there'd be some meeting of the minds on how to improve the bill, what amendments should be taken, how to essentially correct deficiencies. Everyone would nod and then vote to allow the bill to move forward. But I would consistently find that those representations and commitments that were made in committee were not honored, and the bill would continue to move with
in
none of the amendments.
In its original form.
Correct. And when I would seek to create a sense of accountability that we need to have the language in the bill properly reflect the agreements, people would throw up their hands and say they had no recollection of having made those agreements. And I would have to then have my staff sometimes spend a week pulling up the video archives and searching word by word by word to actually create the transcript and then show the bill author, for example, what they'd agreed to do. And in some cases, the bill author would reluctantly agree to those amendments. And other times, we just couldn't get the information available quickly enough to stop the bill from sailing through. So another, I think, very powerful application for a tool like this is it allows the legislature to hold itself more accountable
right,
and ensure that representations and commitments that are made are ultimately honored.
Yeah, absolutely. If anybody has even served on a small board, you know, or a committee, they can appreciate how what you're talking about, that process of overlooking something that isn't properly recorded, is going to happen.
Well, Kristen, this goes to your first point in the introduction. Local government at least has the Brown Act and consistently has minutes which are brought up in a subsequent board meeting for review and approval or opportunity to edit
that
or amend.
That are open to the public.
What the public, I find, is always amazed by is the state legislature, with all of its thousands of bills, has no such process. There are no minutes.
But how is that possible? How did that happen?
Because the state legislature, which wrote the Brown Act and the Bagley-Keene Act and the California Public Records Act, all of which are held up as very fine examples of how to produce open government, the legislature decided to exempt itself from all of those laws.
When was that done?
Some of those laws were in the 50s. The most recent one was in 2004. It was called the Sunshine Act. It was a bill that – I'm sorry, it was a piece – it was an initiative that was put before the public by the legislature that passed, I believe, with 83% approval, which had lots of glowing words about openness and transparency and the disinfecting powers of sunlight. And in the last minute, before the legislature put it on the ballot, they put in one little paragraph that said, none of the above applies to us.
Oh, so, my goodness.
When you ask when it happened, there's actually a long history that goes up and includes some very recent actions.
The disinfecting power of sunlight. I'm going to have to remember that phrase because I have to recall that for my next time of trying to whitewash something. You are listening to, if you just joined us, you're listening to Central Coast Voices. Our topic today is using technology to drive democracy. Dr. Sam Blakeslee, who served in both the California State Senate and State Assembly, is an experienced scientist and a business owner and founder of the Institute for Advanced Technology and Public Policy at Cal Poly. He's here with me today. And joining us on the phone is Brandon Carey, who's the West Coast representative for OpenGov. You two can join us in today's discussion with your comments and questions. We'd love to have you call in at 781-3875. And Brandon, are you there?
Yes, I am, Chris.
Hi, I am really curious in hearing Dr. Blakeslee talk about what his experience was with governments and digital democracy. Tell me a little bit about OpenGov and what role you're playing in transparency and how that's working.
Yeah, absolutely. One, thank you for inviting us to be on your show today.
Pleasure.
Just to give you a little bit of background on OpenGov and who we are a software company, a technology company based out of the Silicon Valley that is working with governments. We're building software to help advance financial transparency and create the most robust reporting platform that they've had available to them. Just to give you some background on how we got our beginnings, many governments are working with accounting systems that were created even before the advent of the internet. And so compiling and aggregating financial information is very difficult. And traditionally, they share that information with the community in PDF format. So we take that data, the most complicated and important data that governments have, and put it in a visual format that is very interactive so anyone can understand what's going on with a government's revenues and expenses, and then in a couple of clicks be able to drill down to the information that they're seeking. So just to give you an example, if you all were looking to find out how much Monterey County was spending on their Parks and Rec department, you would be able to access that financial information on the web through Monterey County's OpenGov site, and then be able to, in just a couple of clicks, identify what spending trends have looked like over the last 5 years.
So we'd be able to see what they're spending on and whether it's going up or down, and then be able to tie that back to the total budget?
That's exactly okay. Right. So it marries not only or compiles and aggregates not only their historical financial information, but then marries it to their most recent budget. So if somebody is presenting a bill, for example, to say, we want to increase Parks and Rec department spend by $1 million, well, that doesn't really have any context on its own. But if you can show what spending has looked like over the past 4 years, it helps you understand where the strategy of the community is focused.
And how long has OpenGov been around?
OpenGov has been around since 2012.
Okay, so fairly recently.
We are. We were originally a group that was working with some local governments on pensions and benefit spends. And as the Great Recession bearing down on all of us, trying to figure out how we could provide some insights to these governments to help them weather the storm. And what we quickly learned in asking for budget information, the governments we approached were more than happy to have us come in and help them visualize this information so that they can analyze it. But what we quickly found was when we asked them to send us the budget information, send us their historical financials, they said, great, how do we do that? And so that was when the light bulb really went off, that governments today do not have, most governments today, I should say, don't have the same types of resources that exist in the private sector, which is strange considering government is the largest industry in the U.S. So we're able to bridge that gap from outdated technology to providing the insights that they're looking for.
So are the citizens actually accessing this information? Or is
yes,
it used?
They certainly can. So just to give
but
you
are they using
maybe
it?
Provide some context for how governments have traditionally accessed financial information. Let's say a citizen had a request and they went to a particular department head. Maybe it was the police chief asking, you know, how much have we spent on police over the past 5 years? Well, the police chief wouldn't actually have access to that information. They would have to send a request to their finance team, and maybe it was the finance director that would then have to either go into some static PDF documents or into the accounting system and run multiple reports that would take hours, days, maybe even weeks, depending on how busy they are. Instead, that citizen can go to the police chief, ask for that information, and either the police chief can access it directly through their OpenGov site or direct the citizen to the OpenGov website for that government so that they can find the information they're requesting.
Okay. And how do you or does the Institute interact with OpenGov?
We've been aware of OpenGov's work for quite some time, and we admire it. We were familiar with it before it was in its current stage back at an earlier point when it was, my memory serves me, was doing some really interesting work at Stanford, and some of those early versions of the tool were shown to us. And in fact, we found that, you know, very compelling, that, you know, technology could do things that maybe a lot of folks thought, you know, might not be possible. I thought Brendan's comment was very interesting when he, you know, talked about it's ironic that government sort of being the biggest industry, period, is in fact a little bit, you know, backward when it comes to using technology, is a phenomenon we've encountered as well. And when you sort of look around the 21st century landscape and see the radical reinvention of our modern economy through technology, whether it's, you know, the elimination of Blockbuster video, and all of a sudden we go from videos in the mail to video streaming on our TV,
yeah.
Or when we want to get a cab, we now hail it with an app, or if we want to go to a restaurant, we can see through Yelp exactly where to go and even have food brought to us, or we can, when we go on vacation with a simple app, Airbnb, pick the best place and have a great experience. We're finding that technology is essentially reinventing every phase of government because the private sector has to compete. If you don't compete in the private sector, you die because everyone else will compete. That's not true in government, and it's not because government is made up of people who aren't well-intentioned and doing their best. The problem is government has no competitors. There is no imperative to evolve or die in government because it is the last great monopoly standing. And that's why groups like ours, our institute, a nonprofit, or Brendan's, a software company, are looking to find ways to essentially punch through and create solutions that are developed outside of government but allow the citizenry to engage its government because, at least from my experience, if you wait for a government to do it, you'll wait an awfully long time.
You know, and I think just from what you're talking about in terms of the technology, if anybody's gone to a government website and then you compare that to a website that is for private industry, the differences are vast just in terms of the clunkiness and
they
the
are.
Accessibility.
And what the public sometimes hear about is the cost difference is
yes.
very significant, and the ability to deliver a working product on time is different. And again, not to bring up, you know, painful shared recollection from all of our past, but healthcare.gov is sort of an example of the challenges government has in doing projects like this. And again, it's we could sit down and talk about the reasons and what challenges they're facing. But I think our approach wasn't to sit here and criticize government. It was roll up our sleeves and try and build these solutions in large part by using faculty at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, building it into their research projects, pulling in students, some of the best and brightest of Cal Poly, in fact, are in very high demand by Apple and Facebook and Google and others. And when we assembled this team to build the software, once they saw the vision of what we were trying to achieve, I believe we built something essentially on pennies on the dollar. I had a presentation just 2 weeks ago in Sacramento in front of a conference of IT, heads of IT in state agencies and departments. And one of the software developers came up to me, and she was a very experienced person, and said, if we'd been asked to develop the tool that you developed, we would have charged many tens of millions of dollars to do it. And of course, we built the tool on a $1 million gift from a philanthropist. Mm-hmm. And that sort of gives you a sense, that there is the ability to be very nimble and agile and develop solutions outside of government oftentimes that are pennies on the dollar. They're delivered faster than they otherwise would be if they're developed by government. And also, from our perspective, since our goal is citizen engagement, not simply disgorging information, it allows us to build in the hooks that has the opportunity for citizens to communicate back to government, which I think is important.
In the citizen use, Brendan, for you, is there a mechanism within that to try and elevate the awareness of the general population about how to use that tool, so that there is an increase of accessibility?
Yeah, and the way that governments are utilizing the OpenGov dashboard does vary from community to community. But what we're starting to see now, which is really interesting, is governments, as we're coming out of the Great Recession, are having a little bit more flexibility in the technology that they can bring onto the government. So those that are really interested in engaging the community more with financial information are actually building it directly onto their webpage with a link to their OpenGov site. So most citizens, when they're looking for budget information, will naturally be drawn to the community's website. They'll go to the financial section, and then they'll see a link to frequently asked questions, like how much has the city spent on revenues over the last 5 years. They can click on that link, and it'll take them directly to OpenGov's or the government's OpenGov website.
Is the information on OpenGov right now, is it focused on the budget, on the finances of the government?
It is.
Okay.
It is. So currently, OpenGov is focused primarily on the finances of the government.
Okay, great. I know you're going to have to leave us in just a minute, Brendan. Is there something that you wanted to make sure that you communicate?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we'd love to work with any listeners out there that are interested in bringing this to their own community. And in fact, currently, there's a grant available to California counties that will reimburse them for full year subscription costs or for full first year subscription cost, making it even more accessible to the governments that are looking for technology like this to not only access and analyze their own financial information, but then be able to engage the community with it through social media or changing the way that they communicate budget and financial information.
So if someone was interested in more information about that, how would they go about getting that? Do you have a website that they can visit?
We do.
All right. What would that be?
I'm happy to contact Brendan Carey at OpenGov, but we also have a website of opengov.com.
Okay.
And there's resources and customer testimonials that exist there and the ability to request more information.
All right. Thank you for joining us, Brendan.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye. And you are listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Public Radio, 90.1 San Luis Obispo, 91.7 Salinas de Paso Robles, 95.1 Lompoc, 90.9 Santa Ynez, 89.5 Santa Barbara, and worldwide on the web at KCBX.com. www.gov.org. Can technology transform the way government works in a meaningful and more transparent way and act as a solution to public alienation? We're talking about that with Dr. Sam Blakesley, former state assemblyman and senator and founding director of the Institute for Advanced Technology and Public Policy at Cal Poly. Do you have an opinion or a question about today's topic or a question for Dr. Blakesley? Call us at 781-3875 and join in on our discussion. And so I want to get back also to digital
democracy. Yes.
And how it works. So you've talked
right.
about what you're doing with it.
Well, I actually in the first segment talked about the core element of
yeah.
the engine, which is this powerful transcription capability coupled with enormous database and then a search functionality. What I didn't mention is we've actually augmented the tool with a lot of other really powerful sources of information which exist out on the web but are difficult to access. And there are four principal sources of information that we have brought into the tool by scraping data off enormous data sets and then importing them onto the screen that allows you to see some of the key issues that are going on behind the scenes. So first, of course, people are very energized and interested by who's giving money to whom.
Yeah.
And so one of the things our tool does, in addition to having this video search and player functionality, is you can, with a simple click of the button, see all the campaign contributions that any legislator, for example, maybe the legislator who's presenting a bill or a legislator who's about to vote against a bill, you can see the entire history of all the campaign contributions that person has received from each of the particular donors. So you can quickly scroll through, and if a lobbyist is making an argument who works for a particular company, you can quickly find out what their financial relationship is between that company and the legislator. Similarly, if there's a lobbyist who works perhaps for a particular lobbying firm that's maybe hired by different companies, you can also do a deep dive and pull up all the filings and information on the lobbyist and that lobbyist's clients, so that when a lobbyist shows up and says, you know, glowing things about a bill or criticizes a bill, you can find out, well, who really has hired that lobbyist, which is very helpful. You can also click and search on all the times that lobbyist has testified on any bill or on a particular bill. So you can see what arguments that lobbyist is making, how consistent they are, whether they change from committee to committee. So first is pulling in the financial data. Second is pulling in essentially the employment data on lobbyists, which is maintained by the Secretary of State. The third is to pull in the gift data. All these legislators virtually all receive gifts of one type or another, which do have to be disclosed. Very rarely do we know what those gifts are. But it's not uncommon for a very major corporation or union to pay for golf tees or tee times or for ringside seats, you know, at a rock concert or for spa treatments in Hawaii. And so our tool also pulls up all the gifts that are exchanged between powerful interests and legislators. And so this background information, which is present on our tool, provides for a much richer experience, because we're firmly of the opinion that what happens behind the scenes when the cameras aren't on is just as important as what's happening in front of the camera. That is what you, of course, see when you simply play the video. But if you don't understand the financial connections between these players, you might not be getting the full history and the full context of what's actually happening.
And when you're talking about transparency, that's really what you're getting. Is you're seeing through everything that
right.
is going in front of and behind the action that's taking place. Those are things that typically now, unless there's some kind of an expose, and that's usually years down the road.
Exactly.
From when an event has occurred, that all of a sudden it's like, oh, he was seemed like such a nice guy, or I never would have figured her for that.
Well, I talked about the use of the tool, for example, by the broader citizenry and activists throughout the state. I also mentioned that it's a tool that can help legislators and people in the building, in the Capitol, hold each other accountable.
Yeah.
But one of the real applications we're excited about is this allows virtually every home paper, hometown paper, to have their own Sacramento reporter. And what I mean by that is every paper now can essentially have their political reporter use a tool like this and watch very carefully what's happening, for example, on a water bill or what's happening on a transportation bill if it affects, say, an overpass in San Luis Obispo. This ability for the journalistic community to, even in the face of crashing budgets and the inability to hire a special journalist to go to Sacramento, now every newspaper can essentially have their own sort of Sacramento bureau. And one of the things we're doing with this tool that we'll be adding in the coming weeks is a Google Alert type functionality that would allow a journalist to put in a query that might entail including the legislators that represent an area. It might put in a query that included maybe the top employers. Here it might be Pacific Gas and Electric, or someone else. If you were up in Silicon Valley, it might be Google. And also to put in bill numbers. And that journalist can sit there and receive daily emails that alerts the journalists when things are happening in Sacramento that comport with the query that was submitted. And so what we see with this tool, a third very important user community is going to be the journalistic community, which we think is long overdue. And again, this idea of transparency and empower, you know, we've seen technology actually hurt journalism.
Oh, absolutely.
With Craigslist, when it comes to advertising, and with the blogosphere, with its free content taking away revenues from papers, technology has really worked against large newspapers and hometown newspapers.
Yeah.
Our vision is a tool like this, essentially put in the hands of small town newspapers, provides the journalistic community a way to re-engage and use technology to do things they couldn't otherwise do except through large expenditures of money.
And I've heard from people that have shared disappointment that in small town newspapers there's less of an ability to reach out, like you're saying, and really create honest and journalism.
Right.
So it becomes repeating what they've got. You get the same
story.
It's derivative. Over and over.
That's right.
Again.
The AP runs a story, and then everyone grabs it and just runs the same story. Which
and then
have
it's like a different face, different nodding head. That's it.
And this essentially gives every journalist primary source material.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is you actually
if they work for it. Yeah.
You simply use the tool, and you have the exact quote of your local assembly member or senator right there in front of you, and you can write a story around what was actually said the day before in testimony in a way that you otherwise couldn't unless you'd actually been there. And then you can call the legislator's office and say, hey, we're running a story, and as we understand it, you said such and such in committee. You know, we're going to, you know, our deadline's 5 o'clock. If you want to have a revision to what you said, please call us back.
Yes.
And I will tell you, before digital democracy, it wouldn't be uncommon for a legislator to receive a call like that and then just not have time to call by 5 o'clock.
And go ahead and
but
make
now
their
the paper
move. Right.
Now that legislator knows a story will be run, there is primary source material.
Right.
It's recorded. It's recorded, it lives up to the journalistic standards, it allows a story to be built around that video.
Yeah, there's accountability there, and I lost Natalie. If Natalie is Natalie did call in, and Natalie, you can call back. Sorry, we lost you. This is really exciting stuff. Where are you in the progression of the creation of this, and how soon is this really going to be rolled out so that it's so available?
We in fact rolled it out in May.
Wow!
So less than a year after we received our $1 million grant. We actually rolled out a beta version the first week of May. I went up to Sacramento and with Lieutenant Governor Newsom, who's a member of my board, we stood in front of the cameras and rolled out the tool to, again, the Sacramento Press Corps, and they wrote amazing things about it. The LA Times wrote very powerful editorially about the use of this tool, San Francisco Chronicle, the Sacramento Bee, San Jose Mercury News, Contra Costa Times, virtually all of the publications that were present were not only excited by the tool, but editorialized on how powerful this tool potentially is going to be for Californians. As I said, we're now reaching the very end of our first year, and we're wrapping up, and we're hoping we'll get another year of funding. We don't know.
What's been the end user experience on this?
We're building case histories now, but the case histories to date have been very powerful in each of the three communities I've mentioned so far. The activist community, we've got some great testimonials and case histories about how it's helped people communicate with their networks far from Sacramento and what's really happening. With the journalistic community, we have some journalists who are telling us they use the tool now daily. It's become indispensable. And inside the Capitol, we have reports from staff of specific instances when bills were not amended as promised. The tool was used, and the bill was then reconsidered and improved. So we're in the process of building case histories so we can go out for another year of funding. And the case histories are important because with them you can demonstrate the value, potential, and power of the tool. And that's always a challenge when you're building software. Does it work?
Right.
When you answer the base question, does it work, then you have to ask the question, and then did it make a difference? And so we've answered the first question unequivocally. The tool works. What we're doing right now is answering the second question. Is it making a difference? Is it having an impact? And our challenge now is, where do we go from here? We've frankly been successful beyond our expectations,
really?
Which is a good thing.
That is exciting.
As a sort of a startup think tank, for us to have a real success like this coming out with our first project has been, very exciting. And we've been getting a lot of input from a lot of very smart people about what we should do with the tool next. How do we expand it? How do we grow it? What functionality do we include? What's the new user experience? What audiences should we be trying to target? And that's actually a very important process, the sort of strategic visioning of how a tool essentially unfolds through time is critical. Mm-hmm. To make sure you don't end up in box canyons or wasting resources. And so we've got a number of really intriguing ideas we're exploring now that we're wrapping up this first year.
I can see, having served on so many nonprofit boards and being part of nonprofits, and certainly in some nonprofits, there is so much legislation that goes on that have huge impact
right.
on them. Trying to have a small nonprofit where you're trying to control expenses, for mm-hmm. example, and then having people who are key to going to Sacramento and going before and testifying, and it's a lot of expenditure.
It's a lot
of time. It takes resources away. I can see how a tool like this would be an excellent example of being able to give them access to
exactly.
the information, stay on top of it, because the feeling now has been, unless you have somebody sitting there constantly,
you're exactly right.
Your eye off it.
And that's why powerful interests are so advantaged, because they are the ones who are resourced to hire
the
lobbyist
to sit there full time.
$20,000 a month
yes.
to represent their interests, and the lobbyist will show up coiffed and well appointed and informed, and will be in there advocating for their clients. But if you're advocating for foster kids, can you afford a lobbyist? If you're advocating maybe for small businesses and trying to deal with some burdensome regulation that's about to put you under, can mm-hmm. you as a small business person go
right.
and hire your own lobbyist? Absolutely not. And so this is a tool that, from our perspective, helps level the playing field and redistributes power back to the citizenry. And as I said in my opening comments, my personal belief is that the alienation that the broader public is feeling is really a great social ill that we have not yet awakened to. And I don't want to be overdramatic, but look in the aftermath of the Weimar Republic in Germany, with the kind of social unrest and the kind of anger that emerged in the German populace and during that time of great difficulty in believing that they were unable to affect the world around them. People began reaching out to politicians and people who have solutions that ultimately are not very good
yeah.
For anyone. And so I believe the issue of alienation is very important. And I believe technology is probably the fastest way to put power back into the hands of the average citizen.
Yeah, and the apathy and the disappointment and the alienation that we're just seeing now, and we're what, now 17 months out from our general election, is frightening.
I think people are beginning to kind of get it, you know, what we're seeing in the terms of the level of anger, again, across the political spectrum, or maybe anger, maybe I replace it with frustration. But the sense that people are willing to go to great lengths to try and cast a vote that is a statement vote, rather than actually maybe carefully and thoughtfully choosing someone who can actually solve problems, is troubling.
Do you think it will make a difference in governments with this kind of a tool, and who will run for offices at some point? I mean, what is your long-term vision? Obviously, transparency, but at the end of the day, from having served in offices, what would be your kind of if you had a vision to create?
You know, if you look at campaigns today, they're enormously expensive. We spend millions of dollars even for legislative races here in California. Yeah. It's not uncommon to spend, you know, $2 to $4 million. We just had one finish up in the Bay Area that was closer to $10 million.
Wow.
And what happens, as everyone knows, is you get bombed with information that may or may not be correct. And it happens, you know, during that brief interval of 6 weeks typically before an election occurs. I see technology as an ability to connect the citizenry with electeds on a more continual basis, literally bill by bill, issue by issue, to create that network that can more instantly hold a politician accountable when a politician is not living up to promises or commitments that were made. Or conversely, if a politician needs to make a really hard vote and do something that may upset powerful interests, to be able to cleanly and clearly explain the rationale for that vote.
Mm-hmm.
So I used the term earlier, statesmen and stateswomen. We need that, but that cannot occur if the only way to communicate is by raising millions of dollars and then shouting at each other during a campaign.
Yeah.
We need a process whereby the citizenry can see and explore and understand really what their electeds are doing, and similarly the electeds on a more continual basis can engage with constituents. And from my perspective, as we begin turning up the volume of communication through the duration of the time a person is in office, as opposed to just in that little window before an election, we have the prospect of improving the quality of legislation, improving the conduct of legislators, and potentially attracting ultimately electing better people to serve in office.
That's great. You are listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast radio. And we are serving from Salinas to Ventura. If you're just now joining us, you can still hear this show in its entirety on KCBX.org. That's www.kcbx.org. You can access any of our archived previous shows also, or any of the local programming at your leisure. And today's topic is digital democracy, using technology to drive democracy, what that looks like and what it can look like. My guest is Dr. Sam Blakesley, former state assemblyman and senator and founding director of the Institute for Advanced Technology. We have about 13 minutes left in today's show. If you want to call in, we probably have time for a phone call, and you can reach us at 781-3875.
Chris, I'll just share with you real quickly some of the thinking that's going into what we may be doing next year.
Yeah,
if you think
I'd love
that
to
would
hear,
be of
I would
interest.
Love to hear that.
So we've had some ask that we, you know, build out the tool so it can be applied to local government. So your Board of Supervisors, City Council meeting would potentially be searchable and accessible. We've had others say, no, what we really want you to do is build it out for state agencies so we can see what the Public Utilities Commission is doing, or what the California Energy Commission is doing, or what California Fish and Game is doing. But it looks like the direction we're probably heading is, in fact, to expand the tool nationally. Mm. So we are in the process of building a proposal to over the next 2 years take the same technology and crack open the legislatures of up to 10 more states.
Wow.
And by moving nationally and then integrating the tool such that from anywhere in the nation, you can see what the discussion is on pick your issue in Texas or California,
right,
or New York or Illinois. It'll give journalists, the press, and the public a much better sense of how these issues are moving in state houses. Because as we know, invariably, reforms, whether they be good or bad, don't start in Washington. They start in the sort of the crucible of government, which is in state houses.
Right.
And so the proposal we're looking at now is to take the tool nationally so that the same kind of experiences people are now having in California with digital democracy can happen in state houses all across the country.
What's been the response from using this tool here in California?
Mostly it's been shock and incredulity. And I actually think that's very accurate. When I say we, those of us who were on the team, when we were up in Sacramento, we all understood that this tool was sorely needed, but we could not for the life of us figure out who would build it or when government would get around to doing it or how you'd find a software development firm who'd, you know, have the resources or skill or insight to know how government works well enough to build it properly. So when we left the legislature and started this institute, I think we were very blessed really to have a team that understood the problem so with such depth and similarly understood the resources in terms of data sets and databases that existed out in the Secretary of State's office, the National Institute for Money and State Government, and the Secretary of State's office and Ledge Info. We had the ability to pull all these pieces together and create a very high-impact tool. And when people now see the tool, they're surprised because although I think, you know, insiders understood this data existed, there was no sense that there was any way to pull it all together into a single portal.
And the response from government?
So that's interesting. Because we give you the ability to see what your legislator is doing and how well he or she is performing under pressure,
right?
We find some legislators actually don't like the tool at all.
Oh, well, that doesn't surprise me. It didn't surprise you, did it?
No.
Yeah.
Conversely, we find some legislators are thrilled.
Great.
They actually see this as a way to help them communicate, you know, with their constituents. And similarly, some lobbyists are very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, if you're a lobbyist for a big company and your constituents are in a boardroom someplace, you don't want this tool.
Right.
Conversely, if you're a lobbyist for a trade association, a chamber of commerce, any organization
small business
that has multiple members,
right,
and you need to communicate with your members,
right,
this tends to be a tool that those sorts of lobbyists actually like. So we're getting both positive and negative reviews based on who the legislator is and who the lobbyist is.
What does the Institute need to go further, to keep going?
So, as I said, it cost us a little over $1 million to build this tool,
right,
over this last
year.
So
are you looking for investors? Are you looking for grantors?
Philanthropists. Foundations, nonprofits. We're looking for those who are passionate about open government.
Yeah.
And we're hoping that our track record demonstrates that we're able to deliver. We're a very small team. You know, we've got three or four people who work for the Institute, and then we have three or four faculty who are supported with our grant. We've had it up to, I think, 65, 70 students helping build the tool. And then we use some of the money for outside vendors for the graphical user interface where there's particular specialties. So the funding, every penny is spent.
Yeah.
It's a very lean, mean organization.
Wow. And we have, I'm going to take a real quick question from Ray here, or comment. Ray, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I have kind of both, I guess. One is I'd like to find out, you talked about using this tool for newspapers and other agencies. What about a person like myself, just a regular everyday citizen, and I want to find out about how a bill is going through a committee,
yes,
or what people are voting on it? How would I get access to this tool?
Yeah, so hey, Ray, nice to hear from you. You can log on right now and just type digitaldemocracy.org in the URL, and it'll pop right up. You can put in a search for any bill you're interested in, and one database, which I hadn't mentioned previously that I'll mention now, that we access is something known as Ledge Info. It's an enormous database that has every single bill, all the text, the entire history of that bill, all the amendments that have happened with that bill, all the votes that have occurred with the bill, and analysis of each bill. So if you're interested, Ray, in a particular bill, you can go to our site. Just log in. It's free. There's no cost. Go to the tab that says bills. One of the tabs will pop up, and you'll be able to put in the bill number. And inside that space, you'll have enormous tools at your disposal to research a bill, up to and including finding out who the author was, where that author comes from, what other bills that author has put forward. And you can then look at the hearings on each of those bills and find out when the next hearing is scheduled to occur.
Okay, thank you. I'll do that. I'm a computer person myself, so I'll look at that. And then I have a comment. I don't want to give away my age, but I remember Eisenhower being the first president, so that's been some time ago. But one of the things I've done over the years is write various people in government, all the way down from the president to the mayor and congressman, whatever. And normally I get a nice reply back. The president sends you a little card. Some of the local leaders will say thank you for your comments, so on and so forth. But nothing seems to really change because I don't have much power individually, or even if I have a small group. Do you think this is a product or a thing that's going to change that, so the individual has more power to actually change government?
Ray, that was a great question. I feel like you kind of set me up on this. It's my closing remark. What I'll say is that is what we're doing next year. We're building social media tools that will allow the citizenry not only to talk to each other and network in a way that mobilizes and activates people in local communities, but we're looking at social media capabilities that will essentially get into the ear of each of the electeds and the legislators. We think there's enormous potential, and we're creating very specific plans on how to do that now to build that functionality in. Because, Ray, you're exactly right. At the end of the day, what really matters is, can we change the system? Can we have an impact? Can we get legislators to to wake up and do the right thing?
And if people want to go to the website, Dr. Blakeslee, it is?
Digitaldemocracy.org.
And please do go and look around. It is fascinating. I want to thank my guest today, Dr. Sam Blakeslee, former California State Senator and Assemblyman, founder of the Institute for Advanced Technology and Public Policy at Cal Poly, and Brendan Carey, who joined us by phone with OpenGov. He's the West Coast representative. And to Ray, who called in today, thank you for your questions. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX. Next week, please join host Fred Monroe and his guests as they talk about cardiovascular diseases like heart attacks and strokes. I'm Chris Kington Barker, and thank you for joining us on Central Coast Voices.